Hello, I'm Alicia Bryan Baines. This is number 0646, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0646. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, Jeremy Sides is a scuba diving YouTuber who recently cracked a 20-year-old cold case of two Tennessee teenagers who went missing in 2000. He cracked the decades-old case in just 2 weeks.
Yes, but in their defense, the technology, the sonar technology I'm using, has only been around a few years. Also, this is a very small town, and from the very beginning, the rumors started to spread that they just may have packed up and left, or that they was murdered. So it immediately steered this investigation the wrong direction, and nobody really thought that it could have just been a simple car accident. So they started chasing these false leads. It just spiraled out of control, and it went cold.
Broadcaster Freddy Cruz is the author of the dark comedy novel, They Canceled the DJ.
This book was inspired by actual events, something that happened to one of my buddies. This happened pre-COVID at a music festival where he was hanging out backstage with a band that shall remain nameless and a photographer with a Houston publication that shall remain nameless as well. And he thought he was hitting it off with the female photog. Thought maybe there would be a date. And lo and behold, no. She left him for the lead singer of the band, and last I heard, they're married and living in Europe.
Stuart Nellman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nellman, and John Grisham strikes again on this edition of Book Banter with his macabre legal thriller, The Judge's List. This is one list you don't want your name on. So to find out how you can avoid The Judge's List later, just check out the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guests later. The person who told you this was show number 0646 was Alicia Bryan Baines, a former global news anchor and former colleague who is currently the race and reporting facilitator at Chorus, which means she teaches a course for Global News Academy on reporting and race. Thank you very much, Alicia, for doing the guests late on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A woman was escorted off a December 23rd flight at Atlanta's Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport after police say she caused a disturbance on a flight from Tampa, Florida. According to the Atlanta Police Department, officers received a call about an unruly passenger on Delta Flight 2790. That's Delta, not Omicron. When the jet arrived at its gate, officers were told that the woman, Patricia Cornwall, caused a disturbance in the air. That disturbance reportedly led to the injury of fellow passengers and Delta employees. Based on that evidence, police detained Patricia and contacted the on-call FBI agent. She was taken to the Atlanta Police Precinct inside the airport, where FBI agents responded and took her into custody. So, what started this altercation which led Patricia to yell, punch, and spit on an old man during a Delta flight? It was because the old man wasn't wearing a mask. It should be noted that Petulant Patty wasn't wearing a mask either. Now, I've seen the video of this in-flight show, and Petulant Patty really goes off on the old guy, but he really gets her goat when he called her Karen. Yeah, I'm guessing there are not enough anger management courses for Patty. By the way, you can see this video via Twitter. The link is on the Stuff File program fan page on Facebook. Still with airports, after a limo started doing donuts in a parking lot at McCarran International Airport in Las Vegas, Nevada, employees called police. They reported plenty of detail. The driver was wearing a clown mask, was maneuvering around the flight line where jets are parked and told an employee, "I have a bleeping bomb. I'm going to blow this place up." When officers arrived, 36-year-old Matthew Hancock told them he had a gasoline device and a gun and needed a jet so he could fly to Area 51 to look at aliens. He was arrested, charged with trespassing, communicating a bomb threat, and threatening an act of terrorism, with other charges pending. Hancock also told investigators he was TikTok famous. Well, now he's dimwit famous. Florida authorities said they found cocaine and methamphetamine wrapped around a man's penis during a traffic stop, but the man, 34-year-old Patrick Florence, who was a passenger in the car, denied the drugs were his. Pinellas County Sheriff's deputies said they stopped the vehicle driving without its lights at around 4 a.m. a couple of Saturdays ago. The driver, 27-year-old Darius Owens, was arrested on charges of DUI and marijuana possession. Authorities said they found a gun under the passenger's seat while searching the car and discovered the drugs while searching the passenger. Florence said the drugs were not his, but did not say who the drugs belonged to. You know, I think I speak for most males when I say that on the rare occasion when something is strapped to one's penis, you usually have a good idea of where it came from and who put it there. And if you're not, well, my friend, you have self-awareness issues. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, two transport trucks full of
butter
went missing from Trenton, Ontario on Boxing Day. Each of the trucks was loaded with about 20,000 kilograms of
butter
worth about $200,000. While the trucks were found on December 27th, the next day, the
butter
was missing. Which begs the question, when will the cookies be ready?
Parquet!
Not quite. It was the real thing. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Jeremy Sides is a scuba diving YouTuber who solves cold cases. Recently, he helped to solve the cold case of two teenagers who went missing in 2000 in Sparta, Tennessee, when he found a car in a river that had their remains. To talk about the case and the job that he has, Jeremy joins us via Zoom from Georgia. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, how you doing?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. I saw an article in the Washington Post which talked about the two teens that you found that were missing for 21 years. How did you come to this case?
I came across this case. There's two main websites that I looked through. And essentially, they're both just missing person databases. And I'll just scan through these until I come across one, you know, that just reads. It's a weird read. It's just somebody left. Let's say somebody left to go get groceries and they vanished and their car vanished and nobody knows anything. And then I'll try to look. I was like, OK, well, I wonder where they were located when they were last seen. This case in Sparta, Tennessee, right in town, there's a big river. And this is pretty much how all these missing person cases line up. So I immediately assumed or started to assume that, okay, somewhere around that town, that car is in the water. So that's when I decided to take it a step further and go into town and just start searching water.
Okay, so you did this. No one else has done this in 21 years, I'm guessing. When did you start and when did you find the car?
I wish I had the dates, but I mean, essentially it was, I did.
Well, you know, roughly.
I mean, we're looking at maybe like 2 weeks collectively of a list of research and about 2 days of actually looking for them.
So you don't even live in the area and you did in 2 weeks, essentially what they couldn't do in 21 years.
Yes. But in their defense, the technology of the sonar technology I'm using has only been around a few years. And also, this is a very small town. And from the very beginning, the rumor started to spread that they just may have packed up and left or that they was murdered. But so it immediately steered this investigation the wrong direction. And nobody really thought that it could have just been a simple car accident. So they started chasing these false leads, and just kind of, it just spiraled out of control and it went cold.
And we should mention, because, I mean, there are two teenagers who are missing. It was a girl, 18-year-old Erin, and a boy, 17-year-old Jeremy. They were in the car. Obviously, they went into the water. And as you said, there was all kinds of speculation to they were murdered, they were kidnapped, they ran off. The list went on and on and on. But sometimes the simplest answer is the correct one, and you managed to find it within 2 weeks, something that they couldn't do within 21 years. Let's go back to just how this all started for you in being someone who is a scuba diving YouTuber who solves cold cases.
It has just been, it evolved so far from when I began. I mean, I started like 2016, just wanting to break through in the online filming industry, you know, YouTube videos, Facebook, all that, because there is a market there if you could just break through. And so I just started filming my journeys outside, and it started with simple metal detecting videos, you know, and I just film with my phone. And then eventually it evolved into creeks and then rivers. And then I got scuba certified and started diving the rivers just to see what's down there. And we stuck on, like, stolen property was a big thing we kept finding. So we always had the cops involved. We found tons of guns. And through this journey, I met with another group out of Oregon, and he's doing the same thing. And me and him were growing at the same time, doing the same thing. And then he accidentally solves a cold case, pulling a car out of a river that had a body in it. And he decided that is a that's a good thing to be doing. And I agreed. And so he started before me, and I just learned, like, all the tricks from him. And then, like, this past year, I decided, like, okay, I'm ready. I got all the equipment I need. I'm gonna go full time, go all in. And so I did. And I found some cases that read right. And I went to Tennessee, and I started nailing it. Before Jeremy and Aaron's case, I found an 84-year-old woman that, you know, disappeared in her car, and she was in the river also. So I'm definitely doing it right. So, I mean, it feels right. You know, it's more than just entertaining somebody with videos. It's like, this is a purpose, so to speak. And it's where I need to be. It feels like I need to be doing this.
It's almost frightening that so many people end up in the river.
It is pretty crazy, but I mean, it is creepy, but when you look at the big picture on how many people are missing and how many cars are in the world, and just, it's a big world out there, and it's not surprising, like, these cars just end up in bodies of water, and, you know, sometimes it's accidents, it could be suicide, you know, foul play, but it is pretty wild, but there's a lot of water.
With the recent success that you've had in the two cases you just described, and the fact that you have a YouTube page and you do this and you post a lot of this information, are you now getting calls from people who have lost loved ones and have no idea where they may have gone?
I am now. Ever since Erin and Jeremy's case, you know, hit the news and spread throughout the world, my emails and messages have been blowing up. And I've been looking into a few cases, but a lot of them, sadly, are just missing people. And I'd love to help, but when you're just looking for somebody and they've been missing for so many years, it's really hard to come across them, just because it's a body is a little smaller than a car, and it makes me feel bad. But, you know, if I can help, I'll help. But if I can't, I just got to break it to them that there's not much I can do that somebody couldn't do probably better.
Well, let's go back to the family in Sparta, Tennessee. When you found those two kids, what was the reaction? Did you meet the families who had not seen their two teenagers in years? And what was the reaction when they were found?
I haven't met anybody in the family. And I kind of keep it that way for the main fact, at least beginning, because I don't want to give the family false hope that I'm going to bring them answers. And then if I strike out, then, you know, then they're sad and heartbroken all over again. So I kind of just go in under the radar, and I don't tell anybody what I'm doing unless I find something. And then I'll let the authorities, you know, notify the family. And they've reached out to me through Facebook and emails and stuff. And then I've chatted with them that way. But they got enough on their plate right now, and it's very tough time for them. And so when they want to talk, you know, we'll definitely talk together. But right now, I haven't talked to anyone face to face.
You mentioned earlier some of the things that you actually find down in the river. Now, you are certified to go down as a scuba diver, as you mentioned. When you first started doing this, did it surprise you as to what you find on riverbeds?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There is no shortage of weird stuff and stolen stuff that makes it in the rivers, and it's out of sight, out of mind, so nobody would even think about it. But, I mean, I have found countless guns and knives, and, of course, the usual drop cell phones and sunglasses, Civil War history. There's a little bit of everything. I found, oh, man, actually, we found a pile of bombs one time under a bridge, old pipe bombs. But it was just crazy. You just never think that the river looks so great on top, but underwater, it's crazy.
Now, was there anything that you found down there that you were able to keep, or do you have to turn it over to authorities depending upon whatever it is?
When we find guns, if we've been told by the police that if we find a gun and we can see serial numbers on it, then to turn it in. But if we find a gun that's been down there 50 years and it's just a rusty piece of metal, they don't want it. So I have a few guns here that, you know, they were guns, but now they're just paperweights that I got to keep, and all kinds of little knickknacks and stuff that I found I get to keep. Now, obviously, I didn't keep the bombs. We turned them over to the police.
Generally speaking, when one goes into the river, how many vehicles are down there? And I'm not saying vehicles with people in them. You know, people who just decide to get rid of a vehicle by pushing it into a river.
It really depends on where you're looking. There are spots where we've found up to 17, 20 cars in one spot. And it was a spot that people would historically dump stolen cars. And that's just where they left them. And this was in Nashville. And we spent a good 5 days pulling these cars out of this one spot. And yeah, we ended up pulling out like 17 cars in one spot. So depending on where you're looking, there are piles of cars underwater.
Wow. Your YouTube page and I believe your website is also called Exploring with Nug.
Yes.
I assume you're Nug.
Yes. It was a nickname given to me by my coworkers when I worked at a body shop, because they caught wind that I was metal detecting and filming. And so they started calling me like Gold Nugget because I was looking for gold. And then it just turned into Nug and it stuck with me. So I decided just to run with it.
Well, it is a fascinating career, and for some people, sadly or gratefully, depending how you look at it, it is closure in some cases when you find the remains of a cold case. People can check out your YouTube page. Again, it's Exploring with Nug. It's also the website that people can go to. Jeremy, I thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
No problem. Glad I could help. Or glad I could be on.
Jeremy Sides, a scuba diving YouTuber who solves cold cases. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0646, and you'll find links to Jeremy's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're experiencing The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Sit back, relax, let it rattle around between your ears, tickling your cerebellum, and enjoy.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the author of They Cancel the DJ, plus Stuart Nullman is along with another edition of Book Banter. We do indeed have an Idiot of the Day coming your way, and much more in Stuff File news here on the Stuff File program, which is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get back to the stuff. With the new year, we've decided to add a new periodic award to the show. As you know, we have the Darwin Award and, of course, the Weekly Idiot of the Day, but I thought we should add a new one. This award will be given out to government and leadership types, but it's not a right or left polarizing kind of thing because, as you know, we don't do politics on this show. Instead, it's a stupidity in governmental management of all stripes kind of thing. It's also an award that could be given out to upper management in corporations as well for some of their boneheaded leadership ideas. I'm calling this award the Mayor Larry Vaughn Bad Judgment in Leadership Award. Film fans will remember that good old Larry was the mayor of Amity Island in the movie Jaws. So, without further ado, here is the inaugural edition of the Mayor Larry Vaughn Bad Judgment in Leadership Award.
Now, if you fellas are concerned about the beaches, you do whatever you have to make them safe. But those beaches will be open for this weekend.
A city commissioner in Portland, Oregon, had an idea to reduce the number of drive-by shootings in the neighborhood that was plagued by them. Orange traffic cones to slow down cars. Ann Hardesty ordered the Portland Bureau of Transportation to install the device around the Mount Scott Arleta neighborhood. Grumbled one local resident by the name of Rachel Beckham, "No one is going to say, 'Oh no, local access only, I better not shoot here.'" Sure enough, the scheme didn't work. The frequency of 911 calls about shootings in the area went up, not down. I'm just guessing that with the traffic cones slowing the cars down, that has improved the drive-by shooter's aim. Anyway, said Hardesty, "Installing these barrels alone will not and is not intended to end all gun violence, crime, or speeding in our neighborhood, from police to community-based organizations to the ways we design our infrastructure. We all have a role to play in this crisis." Really? Really? I'm guessing that the residents are tiring of their role, that of targets. City Commissioner Ann Hardesty, congratulations. You are the first recipient of the Mayor Larry Vaughn Bad Judgment in Leadership Award.
Let's be reasonable, huh? This is not the time or the place to perform some kind of a half-assed autopsy on a fish.
Moving right along, a state trooper clocked a car driving at 119 miles an hour in a 60-mile-per-hour zone in Fulton County, Georgia. After a chase that reached speeds of 135 miles per hour, that's about 215 kilometers per hour, folks, troopers got 25-year-old Tobias Holmes pulled over and arrested him for DUI, among other charges. Holmes's two passengers were also allegedly drunk, 22-year-old Anthony Isaac and 25-year-old Brandon Oglesby. Oglesby was also cited for having an open container of alcohol, and the Rockdale County Sheriff's Office came to the scene to confiscate all three of the men's weapons. All three men are Rockdale County Sheriff's deputies. They've also been placed on administrative leave pending results of an investigation. Gee. Do you think the background check of the hiring practice of the Rockdale County Sheriff's Office is a bit suspect? Just a little, maybe? And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, 38-year-old Gilchrist County, Florida Sheriff's Deputy Trent Kelly Freeman allegedly filed several sets of Family Medical Leave Act paperwork with notes from area doctors saying she had been hospitalized and comatose with severe COVID-19. She also received hundreds of hours of sick leave donations from coworkers while she was away. But investigators from the Florida Department of Law Enforcement say that Detective Freeman wasn't in a coma or even sick. She was working at another full-time job. She was arrested and charged with uttering a forged instrument and scheme to defraud. She's being held on $50,000 bond. You know, nothing says bored with your job like faking a coma. And by the way, now that she's arrested and charged with a crime, what explanation is she giving to her other full-time gig? Inquiring minds want to know. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Freddie Cruz is a Houston media personality and podcaster who is the author of the dark comedy novel, They Canceled the DJ, Freddie joins us via Zoom from Houston. Hi, Freddie.
Good afternoon, or morning, or evening, or overnight, whoever is listening to this at a time that is not afternoon time. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, you spent a lot of time in media. You spent a lot of time in radio. So have I. So the idea of this book, based on the synopsis of it, They Cancel the DJ, is very, very frightening. I don't think I've been as frightened as since I saw Clint Eastwood in Play Misty for Me.
Oh, wow. You know what? I don't even remember the last Clint Eastwood movie I saw. But, you know, I will tell you that this book was inspired by actual events, something that happened to one of my buddies, Tyler Fry, who is soon to be in Kansas City. But this happened pre-COVID at a music festival where he was hanging out backstage with a band that shall remain nameless and a photographer with a Houston publication that shall remain nameless as well. And he thought he was hitting it off with the female photog, thought maybe there would be a date. And lo and behold, no, she left him for the lead singer of the band. And last I heard, they're married and living in Europe. So I took that situation, which is funny in and of itself, but I took that situation, and as a storyteller, what you want to do to tell what you believe is to be an engaging story, you make the worst out of it. So you put this main character, who, by the way, is AC, you put him through the freaking ringer, make his life miserable. You give him a little carrot, you give him a taste of happiness, and then you yank it away, kick him in the stomach when he's down. And that's what I hope to accomplish with this story.
Well, again, having spent many years, and including doing a late night radio show for 20 years, the people you sometime, well, let me rephrase it. Sometimes you do not want to meet your listeners. Let's just put it that way.
Yes, it's the unwritten rule. Thank you very much. I was on another show and they didn't quite understand this. So going to your point, it's the unwritten rule, the cardinal sin of dating a listener. You do not date a listener.
No, don't. No.
and that is the problem with AC, the main character, is that, well, he fell head over heels for someone he thought was going to be Mrs. Wright. And she wasn't.
Okay, so I introduced you as the author of a dark comedy novel.
Yeah.
But I'm sure you've been doing a fair amount of press in talking about this book. And when you're doing press, let's face it, you're talking to people who have kind of lived this experience to a certain degree. So are you coming across people who are suffering from PTSD or who don't find it as a dark comic novel?
Well, you know, and it goes back to making the worst out of an actual event in that, well, you know, and this is the inciting incident. So this is not a plot spoiler. AC is ditched on stage in front of thousands of screaming fans at a concert. So this is him plotting revenge for the entire story. He goes after people who are trolling him on Twitter because of what happened when he first met his squeeze, who he thought was going to be Mrs. Wright. So it is a dark comedy in the sense that he's doing these things and acting like a complete nutbag, but I'm doing this in a way that I feel is quite entertaining. I had fun writing it, so.
Okay, so you had fun writing it, but now that it's out, this is based on a true story. So how do the real players in your story, who are, again, fictionalized for the purposes of your book, how do the true players feel about what you've written?
Well, I mean, it's I wouldn't say based on a true story, rather than it was just inspired by actual events. So I always go back to maybe like the Blair Witch Project, in the sense that it was inspired by one simple thing. And then you kind of just take that nugget and then you twist it and turn it to where you have something completely different, but it was inspired by this. Or if we want to talk about something like Ernest Hemingway brand barbecue sauce, which is inspired by his travels to Havana, Cuba, which probably has nothing to do with the actual experience, but is inspired the flavor, the essence, the ingredients that go into it. And that's kind of where I was going with inspired by actual events with regards to the storyline, the plot of the novel.
But even though you're writing about a story that is embellished, you are taking the essence of some real people and writing and drawing on their personalities. Do they see themselves in what you have written?
No, because I have, yeah, well, and these, the band involved has no idea, nor does the love interest, because I mean, it wasn't one of those things where my buddy Tyler went on a date with this person and then got dumped on stage at a concert. That was my plot and that was my embellishing it. So it was like taking the story and like, huh, okay, I'm going to totally twist this and make it into something even worse. Now, does my buddy Tyler see himself in the main character? I don't think he's read the book just yet. If he does, I don't know. As a fiction writer, as a storyteller, you take certain traits and characteristics of people that you know, and you mesh them all well together. There is a particular scene with the love interest. Her name is Bobby. There is a particular scene, a scene where I feel that's kind of autobiographical for me, but we're talking about a female character in the story who writes erotic fan fiction. But the scene totally relates to me more than any other scene in the story. Yet here we have this female character who ends up ditching someone who is kind of sort of, but not really her boyfriend. But there you go.
Well, just to clarify the situation, I have to ask this one question. That is, are you still speaking to Tyler, or more important, is Tyler still speaking to you?
Oh yeah, Tyler is a very, very good friend of mine. Yeah, he's a very good friend of mine. He knows full well, and you know, we give him a hard time, and you know, he went out on a first date. I don't know when the podcast is going to publish or the show is going to air. He's been on a first date. He's been on quite a few first dates since then. It's been at least a few years since the infamous incident, which shall remain in the annals of radio history as far as our little circle goes. But no, we all have a lot of fun with it. In fact, my first book, When America Fell Silent, I killed him. I killed him and I killed one of my other friends. So if you were to look at the front cover, I have a blurb from my buddy who does afternoons here at KRBE. His name is Kevin. I killed him too. So yeah, it's what you do when you're a writer. You take real life elements and events and you just twist them and turn them and hopefully what you're creating is something that engages the reader into the story. And I'm quite confident that people who are going to read They Canceled the DJ are going to have as much fun as I had writing it.
Wow, Kevin's lucky. I've been trying to be a corpse in a book for years.
Oh, Kevin! Kevin got launched out of a cannon and shot at while he was midair.
Oh wow! I love it. I love it. So, in addition to writing this book, as you just mentioned, you are on a radio station, KRBE. You also host a podcast, which is Book This with Freddie Cruz.
Yes, and that is going to be going away. So my employment with my current employer and I are parting ways at the end of the year. So Book This is no more, effective November, as I will not be renewing my contract with my current employer. So I am a free agent starting in January of 2022. I will be podcasting. It'll be something under a different name and independently. And so we shall see where the year takes us. In the past, I've spoken with authors like Brad Thor and David Baldacci, former Navy SEALs like Jack Carr, who, by the way, has an Amazon Prime series coming out soon, with Chris Pratt. I've talked with Rich DeVinny and the whole nine. I mean, I love talking books with writers and authors of all genres, fiction and nonfiction. It's fun.
Excellent. And what you, this is not the first book you've written, as you said. How many books have you written?
Okay, so the first one was out in the summer of 2019, When America Fell Silent, a dark dystopian novel that set in near future America. And then I'm sitting on a manuscript right now, which I don't know if I'm going to do anything with. And then I'm almost done with another manuscript, which, as I'm telling my friends right now, it is going to be my Christmas gift to myself. And I've never done that in my entire life. Normally, when you think of buying a Christmas gift for yourself, it's, oh, I'm going to buy me a double cheeseburger, or I'm going to buy me a new pair of shoes or something. But no, I'm going to finish my manuscript if I have to do it on Christmas morning before Santa Claus gets here.
Wow, a book about dystopian, about a dystopian future. No one ever writes anything positively about the future. It's grim.
Yeah, you know what? I think it goes back to humans being the only species on Earth, at least as far as we know, we are the only species that is aware of our own mortality. And we love to play that armchair quarterback, worst case scenario in the future, because as much as we want to avoid the inevitable, because we're all in 99 years, 99% of us are going to be goners, worm food, right? Under the ground. But as much as we deny that, we kind of are like, well, you know what? Wouldn't it be amazing if we were in some crazy dystopian environment and we lived to beat the ultimate bad guy? I mean, isn't that kind of like that? It's like that desire to be the hero in whatever story you're telling yourself, that you want to think that you'll be that person. Everybody wants to be Luke and Leia. Everybody wants to be Katniss and Peeta, right? So maybe that's what it is. Mm. I don't know.
Well, the current book is They Canceled the DJ, a title that many of us in the business take personally, but it's written by Freddy Cruz. And it's available right now. And Freddie, I thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Hey, thank you so much for inviting me to the show.
Freddie Cruz, author of They Canceled the DJ. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0646. And you'll find links to Freddie's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And here he is once again, our little plaintiff, Stuart Nauman. Hello, Stu.
Hello, Peter. You know, you're lucky I didn't bring Judge Judy with me.
Oh.
because she would have thrown the book at you.
Well, you know what? At the risk of being pelted by screaming fans and also her former bailiff who was on this show not too long ago, I'm not the biggest fan of Judge Judy.
Well, all right. So look, maybe you're a fan of Wapner or, you know.
I'm actually not a big fan of any of the Judge shows. But okay. That's just me.
That's you. But you know what? If Judge Judy had to throw a book at you, it would be a John Grisham book.
Okay.
That's a great segue.
Yes, it is.
And speaking of John Grisham, here on Book Banter, I'm here to review his latest number one bestseller. It's called The Judge's List. And it's about a respected Florida-based judge named Ross Bannock who becomes a psychopathic serial killer whose intended victims are the people who have done him wrong throughout his life, whether they be past girlfriends, law school professors, classmates, or fellow lawyers. These are people who unknowingly are marked for death and end up on his list of doom because they either slighted or humiliated him on his path to a successful legal career. But however, it's up to lawyer Lacey Stoltz, whose previous appearance, if you remember, in a Grisham novel, was as the antagonist in The Whistler, and the organization that she works for, the Florida Board on Judicial Conduct, or BJC, an organization that handles complaints against the state's judges, to get on the trail of Judge Bannock and stop him from murdering any other individual who has the misfortune of being on his list of death. And Lacey gets a great deal of help thanks to the relentless persistence and numerous phone calls of Jerry Crosby, whose father was one of Bannock's unfortunate victims 20 years earlier. So stopping Ross Bannock has become Jerry's main obsession throughout the previous two decades and has doggedly stalked and pursued him to make sure he faces justice for murdering her father. However, along the way, Jerry has managed to uncover the fact that there were other victims of Bannock's vindictive murder spree. Now, The Judge's List, I think, was probably Grisham's darkest book since The Chamber. To tell the story of this chilling series of serial killings and the cold-blooded, calculating, intelligent ways the murderer is able to remain a step ahead of law enforcement literally takes a page out of a Thomas Harris novel, whether it be Red Dragon, or The Silence of the Lambs. Now, Ross Bannock may not have the cannibalistic, gory ways of Hannibal Lecter, but his obsessive, near self-destructive personal traits that keep him going on his killing spree is just as disturbing. So this latest contribution to John Grisham's continually growing collection of best-selling legal thrillers gives a much darker, macabre side to the legal profession. Vengeance, murder, and obsession are the key elements to The Judge's List, but the development of the mind of a serial killer is the element that gives this novel the necessary boo to put it over the top.
Now, you say it's generally darker than most of John Grisham's books. Would you say it's the darkest book he's written?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think something that, like I said, the book that came closest to it was The Chamber, which dealt with the issue of capital punishment. But this is definitely a shade darker than the Chamber.
Well, you know, when it comes to writers who are very prolific, you can sometimes get into their psyche based on what they're writing at this time. Are you saying that perhaps maybe somebody should do a welfare check on John Grisham just to see that he's okay?
Well, you know what? Let's see what happens with his next book. If it continues with the same premise or theme as The Judge's List, yeah, maybe we should consider this.
Okay. So the book again is?
It's called The Judge's List by John Grisham. It's published by Doubleday, and it's $39.
And do you think it's a book that will probably, because just as you described the story, it sounded like something that to me would make a great made-for-TV movie or theatrical release or whatever. Do you think it really sets itself up that way?
Oh, yeah. I could see it. I mean, this is something that's, you know, you put in theaters or maybe, you know, simulcast it and stream it on Netflix or, you know, some other streaming service. Yeah, I could see it. I can see it.
So again, the book is?
It's called The Judge's List by John Grisham. It's published by Doubleday and it's $39.
And what other books do you suggest within this genre, sir?
Well, I'm going to stick with Grisham. A couple of his one early book, which is The Chamber, which I said dealt with the issue of capital punishment, and it was made into a movie with Gene Hackman. And the other of his more recent novels is called The Reckoning. It's about a murder that takes place in Mississippi in 1946, but the murderer, who is a well-respected citizen, was a World War II veteran who survived the Bataan Death March in 1942. And the midway part of the book, it gives a very, very descriptive and graphic look at what the Bataan Death March really was like. So I couldn't put the book down. It's a thick book, and I just sailed right through it.
Mm. Now, again, since you've read a lot of Grisham, do you have a favorite?
Well, I mean, it may be assumptive to say that, The Firm would be it, but it's not. For me, it was always Time to Kill, his first novel, the one that basically he couldn't give away when he first published it. And when The Firm became a huge hit in 1991, Doubleday reissued the book and became a bestseller in its own right. And it's very gripping. That book is very gripping.
So what you're saying is you like his first novel best.
Yeah.
Does that mean...
Not to take away his other books.
I was about to say, does that mean that he's gone downhill since then?
Oh, no. I've read... during the past year, I read a lot of his more recent books. And... just as entertaining, and it's like you can't put it down. It's very enjoyable reading. So he hasn't faltered. Put it that way, he hasn't faltered.
Mm. So again, this week's book is
The Judge's List by John Grisham. It's published by Doubleday, which is his longtime publisher, and it's $39.
And how can we find you other than perhaps? With a medical alert braces under a pile of John Grisham books. I've fallen and I can't get up.
You can't do that with Grisham books. You can find me in the pages of the Montreal Times every week, in print or, on their website at www.mtltimes.ca.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Stewie.
You're welcome, Peter. And this court is adjourned.
Stuart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about a racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We do have a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you. And, of course, an idiot of the day. So let's get right to it, shall we? Since the world seems to be filled with conspiracy theorizing lemmings, let's offer up a story from Europe. The Authority for Nuclear Safety and Radiation Protection in the Netherlands has ordered a company to stop selling wearable 5G signal blockers and recall all that they have sold. The necklaces, bracelets, sleeping masks, and other accessories pitched for both adults and children emit something much worse than the radiation of radio waves. Ionizing radiation from nuclear materials. Worn long term, the protective devices dramatically increase the risk of cancer in the wearers, while there is no evidence that 5G cell phone systems create any harm at all. There is no fundamental difference between them and older 4G or 3G cellular technology. So basically, once again, these morons are brilliant at hurting themselves as a way to avoid harmless things.
Stupid! You're so stupid!
Yes. And still in that vein, Merck Sharp and Dohme, the manufacturers of ivermectin, warns that there is no scientific basis for a potential therapeutic effect in using the antiparasite drug to treat COVID-19, and a concerning lack of safety data in the majority of studies. Still, it's selling so briskly that it is in short supply, leading to not just price gouging, but fakes. Australia's Therapeutic Goods Administration has warned that their testing of the drug purchased online finds that it's often either a much weaker dose than advertised, or worse, entirely counterfeit. Yes, but ironically, the fake stuff is just as effective in treating COVID as the real thing. You know, they say that a sucker is born every minute, and the folks buying counterfeit ivermectin are just simply doubling down. I could play the last drop once again, but you get the picture. A Fiat of Melbourne, Florida employee spotted a man in a paint booth inside the shop, who then got into a pickup truck in the booth and drove off. Melbourne police reviewed surveillance video, which showed the man entering the dealership 2 hours earlier wearing only underwear. The truck was spotted on the interstate, driving erratically and hitting a guardrail before exiting. Officers were able to pull over 40-year-old Richard Blows, who told officers he hadn't stolen the truck, but someone in a red shirt told him to take it. Gee, I wonder if he had just been watching Star Trek. Anyway, he faces multiple charges, including grand theft, leaving the scene of an accident, and violation of probation. He's been in jail 12 times over the last 3 years. Wow. Due to the pandemic, I haven't been in a mall 12 times over the last 3 years. By the way, by the time police were holding him at gunpoint, he had lost his underwear, too. Somehow I don't think that's what the cops meant by drop it. And 55-year-old Rosalie Baker of St. Petersburg, Florida, sold two cars to a recycling center, a 2001 BMW and a 2004 F-150 pickup. Baker filled in various bits of paperwork, including two bills of sale, two derelict motor vehicles forms, and two requests to cancel a title, the latter of which required her thumbprint. And then she accepted $300 for each car. By the time the recycler got the vehicles back to their yard in Hillsborough County, both vehicles had been reported stolen by Baker's neighbors. Investigators matched the thumbprint on the paperwork to Baker, and she was arrested, charged with two counts each of felony grand theft of a motor vehicle, felony dealing in stolen property, and felony false verification of ownership. Why, that story doesn't sound quite neighborly, does it? I get the feeling that Rosalie is going to discover what it feels like to have her possessions sold off by someone else. Anyway, boys and girls, it's that moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. This stuff all presents the Idiot of the Day.
Moments after robbing a Wells Fargo branch in Delaware, a man deposited some of the stolen loot in an ATM outside the bank's front door. Investigators say that 44-year-old McRoberts Williams approached a teller on a recent Saturday morning at a crowded Wells Fargo in Wilmington and handed her a note reading, "This is a robbery. I need $150. Talk about not aiming high. After the bank employee provided Williams with the cash, he fled the bank. But instead of racing from the crime scene like your average bank robber, Williams exited the Wells Fargo and made a deposit at the ATM on the exterior wall of the building. Following the ill-advised pit stop, Williams fled on foot to a nearby shopping center where he was taken into custody by state troopers. During a post-arrest interview, Williams reportedly confessed to the bank robbery and said that the stolen cash was immediately deposited back into the Wells Fargo ATM. He claimed to have traveled to Delaware by riding on the exterior of a cargo train and that his mind is currently being controlled by a third party via an implant located somewhere in his body. Well, let's just overlook the whole implant scenario and just simply ask the question, why, oh why, would you rob a bank then simply walk outside and deposit said bounty at the same bank's ATM? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0646. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number. And once again, that's 0646. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, streaming on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, CKUW-FM in Winnipeg, and CFMU in Hamilton. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Any rebroadcast of this copywritten program in whole or in part without the express written consent of... Oh, God, who the hell are we kidding? Who's going to steal this show? God, who writes this stuff? Holder, what a kidder.